Welcome to Security Wire Weekly, a CertSecurity.com podcast for November 12, 2008. This edition, we'll talk about VoIP security with Patrick Park. Patrick is a network architect with Cisco Systems. He wrote a book, Voice over IP Security. Also, we'll review Microsoft's latest round of patches with Paul Henry of patching vendor Lumensen Security. Paul is a security and forensic analyst with Lumensen. In a moment, the state of VoIP security, but first, this message.
When it comes to analyzing a network, protecting enterprise data, or fighting malware, you can plop down thousands of dollars for a commercial product, or you can get tons of great functionality from a free tool. Let CertSecurity.com show you how some of the industry's best free and open source tools work in our exclusive screencast series. Each month, one of CertSecurity.com's best experts will offer a step-by-step video presentation showing you how to use the most powerful tools and software. Visit CertSecurity.com/screencast. That's CertSecurity.com/screencast.
And we're back. We've heard about threats to voice over IP communications before, but so far they haven't really caused big problems for businesses. But experts say that could change once more companies replace outdated systems with the technology in their call centers. Patrick Park will tell you that the threat is real. He's seen it firsthand as a former VoIP security engineer at a major communications carrier. And Patrick is currently a network architect with Cisco Systems. He's the author of Voice over IP Security. Patrick, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the threat landscape for VoIP. In your book, you break threats down into four different types, threats against availability, threats against confidentiality, and threats against social context. Let's talk about those four areas briefly.
Sure. There are so many different kinds of threats or attacks in the VoIP world. Attackers may disrupt the media service by flooding traffic or collect privacy information by intercepting calls or make a fraud calls by spoofing identities. Well, even spammers may utilize VoIP networks to deliver spam calls, IM messages, spam presence information, which are more effective than email spams because it is very difficult to filter the VoIP spam. Anyway, there are many possible ways to categorize these threats. I would use four categories that most of VoIP threats are belonging to. Well, the first group is threats against availability. It is a group of threats against service availability that is supposed to be running 24 hours, 7 days a week.
So this is stuff like call flooding and protocol fuzzing?
Right. So these threats aim at the VoIP service interruption, typically in the form of denial of service. Mm-hmm. The typical examples are call flooding, the malformed messages, protocol fuzzing, call teardown, the call hijacking, and or some server impersonating, and the quality of service abuse.
Obviously, an attacker is trying to disrupt businesses by halting communications.
Right. This is the most common threat in the VoIP world. And in my experience, in my I used to work for the VoIP service provider, and I saw many this kind of threats from attackers. Well, sometimes they even I don't know why they attacked like that way. Sometimes they try to make the fraud calls, so which means they want to use the toll calls. Well, the second group of the VoIP threat is threat against the confidentiality. It doesn't impact the current communication generally, but it provides unauthorized means of capturing media, identities, patterns, and credentials that are used for subsequent unauthorized connections or other deceptive practices. Well, typical examples are eavesdropping media, call pattern tracking, or the data mining or reconstruction. This is the second group. Well, third group is threat against integrity. It is altering messages or media after intercepting them in the middle of network. That is, attacker can see the entire signaling and the media stream between endpoints as your intermediary. The alteration can consist of deleting, injecting, or replacing certain information in the void media or messages. This is a very sophisticated the attacks because they should know where the traffic goes and where the endpoint is. So they should have some preliminary the information about the traffic to do this. The fourth group of threat is the threat against social context, as known as a social threat. It is somewhat different from other technical threats I talk about, like against availability, confidentiality, or integrity, in terms of the intention and methodology. It focuses on how to manipulate the social context between communication parties so that the attacker can mispresent himself as a trusted entity and convey false information to the target user. Typical threats against the social context are mispresentation of identity, spam calls, spam IM, spam presence, like that, or the phishing.
Let's take a step back for a moment. One of the areas that I thought was interesting was data mining. How can that be done?
Data mining means that collecting all the call records, not only username, but also the password. So whenever the call setup is involved, the user agent and the VoIP server send some call-related ID or password things. So data mining means collecting all that kind of the information.
How serious would you consider these threats right now? How prevalent are they?
Well, I would say it's not that often. It's not that often, okay. But whenever it happens, the impact is so serious. Like in my based on my experience in my previous company in the VoIP service provider, one day the one attacker from the Jamaica sent some floated traffic to our servers. And eventually our servers was down, and we had some the service blackout for more than an hour. So whenever, well, I'm not saying the attack is happen every day, but whenever it happened, whenever servers that the compromised or some network is affected, the impact is just so serious. That's the biggest problem.
What is the session border controller, the SBC? You talk about that in your book. How does it secure a VoIP network border?
Yeah, SBC is the session border controller, as the name implies, a controlling device located on the border of two network sessions. The session is a logical boundary of VoIP network, like between the consumer and service provider network or between two different enterprise networks. The function of SBC is just simply speaking, resolving border issues like interrupt or security issues. Let me summarize the critical functions of SBC. The first one is network topology hiding. It is a key function of SBC, hiding the core network topology from either access or peer network. Most of VoIP service providers like, most of VoIP servers like CPROXY are exposed to external networks so that endpoints may access their servers to request calls or register, which means that the topology of the network service network is partially visible and the vulnerable. So SBC encapsulates the core network and provides a single logical interface for external networks. The external endpoints can see only the IP address and port of SBC rather than actual the VoIP servers.
And finally, let's talk a little bit about the importance of encryption.
The most VoIP service providers these days use the encryption, either signal or media encryption or both. Let me explain a little bit detail of the encryption from a VoIP application perspective, especially with the SIP protocol. End-to-end full encryption is the most common way to provide message confidentiality and integrity between communication endpoints. The SIP protocol standard also recommends the encryption for that purpose, but there is some limitation to providing the full encryption. It is almost impossible, or we may say not practical, to encrypt all SIP requests and responses end-to-end, because intermediaries like a proxy server have to look at the message field to route properly. In particular, request the URI, route, and the VR headers in the SIP messages should be visible to proxy server to route the call. Furthermore, the proxy server needs to modify some messages field like the VR header by adding its own IP address. Therefore, you should have authentication mechanism that proxy servers are trusted by SIP user agent before implementing this encryption. For this purpose, you should have low layer security mechanisms like TLS or IPsec between user agents and the proxy servers. If there are limitations to end-to-end full encryption, you may ask, like, what is the alternatives? Well, the two parts of a SIP transaction can be encrypted, the message body and the media. The message body encryption is done by S/MIME, and the media encryption is done by SRTP.
Well, thanks, Patrick. And finally this week, Microsoft issued two security bulletins addressing flaws in the server message block and XML core services. Only one flaw was given a critical rating. Paul Henry of Lumensen Security now joins us to talk briefly about the latest patches and give his take on the emergency out-of-band update that was issued on October 23rd. Paul is Lumensen's security and forensic analyst. Paul, why don't we start for the patches released this week? One bulletin addresses XML core services and one for the server message block. There's one rated critical for XML core services. Should that be the one that we address first? Talk about how prevalent XML core services are.
Yeah, you know, the bottom line there is that the XML core services allow other applications literally to talk to XML documents and scripting, et cetera. You know, JavaScript, Visual Studios, et cetera. It impacts just a wide range of platforms. I mean, Windows 2000, XP, Vista, Server 2003, Server 2008. And it even gets into the Office environment with Office 2003, 2007, SharePoint server, and even the Groove server all use the code base associated with XML core services. So it is pretty wide in nature.
The second bulletin addresses remote code execution vulnerability in the server message block. What is the SMB, and this one was only rated as important?
Well, they've only rated it as important, but they've also noted in the reports that I read this afternoon that it ranked number one on the exploitability index, which would indicate that it either, you know, they expect exploit code within a 30-day window. Server message block handles communication between various services within a Windows environment. Things such as remote drives or a drive on a foreign host, etc.
Is this potentially serious?
Well, it permits remote code execution, so certainly it requires an urgent response. Anytime a bad guy can, execute code remotely, it's troubling.
What's your take on Microsoft's exploitability index? This is the second month that Microsoft is using it. Are you finding it useful?
I do find it somewhat useful. I tend to stay a little bit more on top of things. I monitor, various groups, we'll say, on the public internet, and typically I get a heads up very quickly when exploit code is in fact available for a given vulnerability. When we had the patch come out here in the last couple of weeks, the emergency patch from Microsoft, within an hour of that patch being released, I actually had exploit code in my hand. So while it is helpful for those who, let's say, don't keep their finger on the pulse of what's happening in the underground on the internet, for people that really do pay attention to this stuff, it's somewhat just confirmation of what we already knew.
Let's go to the emergency out-of-band patch that was released on the 23rd of October.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take thus far in terms of what we've seen in the wild? There have been a number of reports of wormable exploits floating around in China, and then there have been a number of reports of Trojans out in the wild attempting to exploit this flaw. Are the majority of people patched at this point, do you think?
I would hope so, but obviously they're not, or we wouldn't see the activity that we're seeing out there.
Yeah.
I've seen one worm, two Trojans. The Chinese one was somewhat baffling to me. I would have assumed it would have been, either Europe or the United States that had gotten hit with the worm, but it did in fact focus on Chinese sites. Anytime you have an exploit that can be made wormable, that's something you really need to push out there quickly. I personally think Microsoft is really setting a good precedent by moving to this monthly patch distribution. I wish other vendors would adopt that as well. And again, having the ability to do the emergency patches when conditions warrant is a great idea.
Well, thanks, Paul. And that does it for this edition of Security Wire Weekly. You can check out our latest podcasts at certsecurity.com/podcast. And get the latest security news and information at our news page at certsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.